First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the show. It's a historic BS Report today. We've had a late night talk show host. We've had a NASCAR driver, an NBA commissioner, an NBA GM. We've had a six-time boxing champ. But until today, we've never had a female guest. So we're going to break that barrier. But first, tragically and unfortunately, I've got to continue with the worst segment in the history of podcasts. Johnny, are you worried yet? This is a segment where I call my buddy Jacko at work and see how worried he is about the Yankees this week. And since I'm a man and I face up to my responsibilities, we're going to keep this going, even though the lead is now down to 1.5. So let's give him a ring.
Hello, John O'Connell.
Johnny.
Hey, buddy. How are you doing?
Johnny, am I worried yet?
I would think you would be. Are you? Are you okay?
I do want to say, this is not 1978. I do not want to hear that anymore.
We
buried 1978. 1978 is a skeleton in the backyard of the Red Sox cemetery.
It's true.
But as you could tell from these podcasts, I've been worried for about 2 months.
You have
even longer than that. Now Okajima, what the hell happened to him? Now we have one reliever.
And even that one reliever is questionable. One might be an overestimation, my friend.
I love Paps, but he has yet to pitch a six-month season.
A little shaky the last two outings. Although I don't understand why they brought him into that game last night. But
you didn't understand? Why? You thought it was weird that we use a guy for ninth inning saves all year, and then suddenly we're bringing him in the eighth inning?
While
you think that's a panic move?
With the bases loaded? Yeah, I didn't understand that one.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the exact stats are, but him coming in before the ninth inning, it can't be good. But, you know, the guy who's just killed us is he Penn or Teller? Which one is he?
he's Penn, I believe.
Penn has just destroyed us.
Yeah, it really will go down in history as one of the worst trades ever.
Well, the thing that's going to kill me is if the guy they gave up, like the 17-year-old Venezuelan or whatever country he's from, Elvis, somebody, that guy is going to be a Hall of Famer now.
Definitely. He definitely is. He'll be the Jeff Bagwell for this generation of the Jeff Bagwell Larry Anderson trade.
Now, I watched your team last night. I was toggling back and forth as the Red Sox were collapsing at the same time.
I was doing the same thing, yes.
Yeah, Rivera was trying to hold on to the lead.
Yeah.
I have to say, he does not look as sharp as he has in years past.
I completely agree. He makes me unbelievably nervous. Nervous. Last night, I was literally like, I was going to have a heart attack.
And Jabba actually is more, you feel better with him, right?
I do. I mean, it's almost blasphemy to say this, but he's not Mariano anymore. I would much rather have a guy throwing 101 miles an hour blowing things by people than living and dying on that cutter.
Right.
That's far too many people bloop for hits in big situations. It scares,
you know what,
it scares
you know what it
death.
Reminds me of? It reminds me of, I think it was the 2002 Angels. K-Rod was the seventh, eighth inning guy. Percival was the closer. But all the Angels fans felt better when K-Rod was in the game.
Right. Or last year with the Tigers when they had Zumaya and then you bring in Todd Jones as your closer.
Yeah.
And everybody liked the guy that was throwing 100 miles an hour. You know, it's crazy not to. He just blows people away, Jabba.
Yeah. Do you think the league's starting to catch up with him a little bit, though?
Well, I mean, Michael Orr got a hold of him the other night, but he still looks pretty good. And the thing is, it's not just that he throws 100, but he's got that devastating slider.
Right.
And he broke out the curveball against the Red Sox. That was the first time he'd seen that all season. So mixing it a little different, a little more of the repertoire. So
does A-Rod's 3-for-30 concern you at all?
Yes, it has to. This time of year, it's not a good time for him to go cold, and far too typical, unfortunately.
Well, maybe he needs to get another HGH shipment in.
Hopefully Rodney Harrison can drop it off for him. He's got some weeks on his hands.
Do he and Clemens use the same guy, or do they use different guys?
Oh, here we go.
Hey,
now
listen.
The bitterness comes out.
Just the bitterness is out.
Just because you're choking, I don't think we need the bitterness to come out directed at the MVP, do we?
I don't think we're choking. I really don't think this is a very good Red Sox team.
Well, how else would you describe a 14.5 game lead that's now down to a game and a half?
Well, we've gone 54-48 since May 29th.
Right. So you think they just played over their heads in the beginning?
I think they played over their heads the first 2 months. Everybody was healthy. And then the schedule started to catch up with them.
The Yanks were banged up in the beginning of the year, too.
The Yanks, I think, are 66-35 since
yeah,
May
29th. I forget what they are since the All-Star break, but they're like 24 games over since the All-Star break.
I toggle between the Yanks and the Red Sox every night, and I don't see how any rational Red Sox fan could say that we have a better team. I mean, it's not close.
I would agree if you go position by position. I would rather have Beckett than any of our starters.
Yeah, but you have two relievers. We have one. You have three reliable starters. We have one. You have multiple guys who can come up in a big spot where you'll feel like they're going to get a hit. And we basically have Ortiz, who hasn't totally been himself, even though his stats have been there. It's not like 2004, 2005 Big Poppy.
No.
We have Pedroia, who at least will like make the pitcher work to get him out. We have Euclid, who you broke his wrist last week.
Yeah, justice.
And Mike Lowell, who has been more reliable than I think anybody expected. But
Mike Lowell has been so huge for you guys. It's ridiculous.
Other than that.
You're not counting the resurgent J.D. Drew?
No, I'm not.
Big home run last night for Nancy?
I'm not counting him.
No?
The amazing thing is that I like Jacoby Ellsbury, but I think he's come up in a big spot for like 15 straight games in the eighth or ninth inning. It's amazing.
He's a great player, though. He's going to be. Yeah. He's good. I mean, he's scrappy, and he's got speed on the bases. You know, makes you a little nervous. He could be this year's Dave Roberts in the big spot, stealing a base.
I do like him, but I just think that this Red Sox team has too many guys who, when they come up, I just don't feel good.
You're going to get Manuel back for the postseason, maybe, if he feels like playing.
Add him to the list. So, do you think this Yankees team peaked too early, or do you feel like you have something left?
Well, it's tough. No, I think they're playing well, but that's tough to judge because they're playing the Orioles, who basically have just completely given up.
Right.
So it was a really interesting test will be this weekend when they play the Blue Jays, and it's the top Blue Jays pitchers, you know, Halliday and Burnett, who they can't hit. It'll be interesting to see what they do against the Blue Jays. I'm curious to see. I think they're playing good. You know, they're fired up. They seem to have a good clubhouse. Guys get along. Their lineup is amazing.
How excited were you when Jeter took Schilling deep?
Extremely excited. Extremely.
The sad thing was I knew it was coming. I knew something horrible was going to happen. I continue to be confused why Jeter gets so little credit, because everybody picks him apart with the stats and
right.
He doesn't do this, he doesn't do that. And all I know is, really, for like the last 10 years, every time that guy's come up in a big spot, I'm terrified. So where is that stat? Like,
yeah.
And it's third and second, and we have first base open, and we're trying to get this guy out, and with Schilling, who's like clearly running out of gas. That was the defining moment of the season so far. And Francona just really like turned into Grady Little on Friday night, and has not turned back yet.
No, he's really made some questionable decisions.
Panic moves.
But the interesting thing, the good news from a Yankee perspective is the news yesterday that they're going to, when Francona said that there's 10 more games this year and they could see Eric Gagne 5 more times because they want to see what he can produce in the postseason. I'll give him an answer. Nothing. That's what he's going to do for you in the postseason.
Yeah.
I watch a lot of Red Sox games. Let me tell you, if you're counting on Eric Gagne, you're in some trouble.
There's a case where the statistics kind of hold up what's actually happening. He gives up like 3 base runners an inning.
He's awful. I mean, he wasn't missing a little bit the other night. I mean, Jvaratek had the glove low and inside, and the ball was 3 feet outside. It's not even close.
I'm just waiting. Like, I don't know what needs to happen for Mike Timlin to pitch more, because at least, like, he's done it before. I don't care if he's 75 years old.
Yeah.
But I'm just waiting for them to cut to the dugout and him just strangling Terry Francona as Gagne warms up. I'm just shaking him. I was there for you in 2004. What more do I need to do?
What about Manny Del Carmen? He looks all right.
Well,
why don't they rely on him more?
I don't know. And And the Friday night game, and where was Buchholz? That was the other thing. It's like this guy's on a pitch count for the season or whatever. How do you determine like exactly how many pitches somebody throws in a season?
He's like wrapped in bubble wrap. I mean, the guy pitched a no-hitter, and then he doesn't get another start until last night, like 18 days later. That's ridiculous. I don't understand that.
Yeah.
What are they saving him for?
Here's the thing. They put him in bubble wrap, and they're totally protective of him, and yet Dice, who pitched every 6 days in Japan and who clearly needed a break a couple times during the season, they kept trotting him out
for that fifth day.
And now that guy's arm is like hanging to, because he has to throw his 300 pitches or whatever he does before every start.
Yeah, right.
Now his arm is like hanging to the ground. tell me what the tri-state area is like in terms of the Red Sox-Yankee fan dynamic.
Well, it's really interesting to me because I was so excited yesterday when I left work and I was driving home and I was going to put on the Boston Sports Station, and because I was excited to hear them out on the ledge in complete panic and just throwing everybody under the bus because as a Yankee fan, I like nothing more in the world than that.
I hate you.
I know. Of course you do. But and I was shocked and chagrined to hear Red Sox Sports Radio, and they all are just like, well, all we have to do is get in the playoffs and – you know, the division, they kept comparing winning the division to the Bruins winning the Adams Division Championship in hockey and then not winning the Stanley Cup. Yeah, it would be nice to get a division, but it's not that big a deal. You've led it by double digits since April. The Yankees have won it 9 out of the last 12 years. The Red Sox haven't won it since 1995. And you're telling me now, as you choke, that it's not that big a deal that you could just back into the playoffs?
Well,
I couldn't believe it. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I think people are making excuses. At the same time, in 1978, only one team could advance from the division, and it was
I understand that was
100 times bigger.
Of course it was, but I thought that 2004 was supposed to be like, oh, that they had exorcised all the ghosts and they were the big boys on the block now, and they were going toe to toe with the evil empire. You've been in charge for the division for the whole season, and now, oh well, it's not that big a deal. We have to get ready for the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. It's ridiculous.
What else would you say if you were us? What's plan B?
You say we still have a game and a half lead. We're fighting for the division.
Well, there's not a lot of fighting going on.
Well, you could at least have a pretense of that, you know?
We just made Russ Adams look like Ty Cobb in Toronto.
That's a good point. I don't know. I wish
Russ Adams hit 268 in Triple A. All of a sudden he comes up and he's Paul Molitor.
Sox, I don't know, all their fans talk pretty big game and buy their Yankees suck shirts, but push comes to shove and the Yanks make a little noise and they fold like little children, is what I think.
Oh, how dare you.
Get out of the fetal position, Red Sox fans. You still
have
to leave.
How dare you. You know what? I don't want to be the best man in your wedding anymore. I'm out.
Wow.
Why don't you ask A-Rod? Why don't you ask your pal Joe Torre to give the best man speech?
He's too busy drinking green tea on the end of dugout. Someone should tell Joe they're within a game and a half first place.
The thing that kills me about this whole thing is that Jabba came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
I mean, he literally came out of nowhere. You would have put, before the season, you would have put the odds maybe 50 to 1 that guy is a playoff contributor right away.
Oh, yeah.
And this guy really saves your season. Scott Proctor was just about dead when you traded him.
Right.
And
thing I was thinking about today when I was thinking about, like, the Yankees this year versus last year when I was actually high on them. But the bullpen last year, anytime Scott Proctor and Scott Farnsworth were key factors and Ron Valone.
Yeah.
And this year it's going to be Jabba and Vizcaino and maybe some Farnsworth. But Edouard Ramirez has come on and Mariano. It's such a better bullpen. And it's so key in the playoffs for matching up and everything, you know?
Yeah, whatever. I gotta go because we have Erin Andrews coming on, and I'd much rather talk to her than you.
As would anybody.
In fact, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm like a 1 with you talking to you, and I'm a 10 with her. So I'm gonna go. Anyway,
what's your scale on the level of nervousness? Let's reverse this in one of our final episodes here.
Yeah, and thank God the series is coming to an end. I'm not even nervous anymore. It's more like
acceptance.
Like, yeah, the doctor has already told me that I have a year to live, and I'm just like, I'm like Michael Keaton in that My Life movie. I'm just kind of trying to think about how I want to spend the last year of my life.
The various stages of grief, and you've come to acceptance.
Yeah, there's basically this
denial,
four,
anger.
Yeah, there's 4 weeks left in the season, and I'm probably going to die, but there's a chance for a miracle cure, but I'm not going to keep my hopes up. That's where I am, Johnny.
I'm sorry. Well, I wish I could say I was sorry to hear that, but I'm really not.
Yeah. So. I'm going to go.
All right, buddy.
I'll talk to you later.
Say hi to Aaron for me.
Yeah, whatever.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, let's get rid of the Yankee fan and bring on a Red Sox fan. You know her as a star sideline reporter for ESPN's baseball and college football broadcast. She's also one of the few ESPN personalities who can hold their own in HD. And if that's not enough, she's the diehard Red Sox fan. Erin Andrews, are you worried yet?
Oh, I'm panicking. Last night we were at dinner. We're in Miami. And Doug Flutie, who also is a diehard Red Sox fan, we're sitting at dinner. And his wife is texting him updates. I'm on MLB.com on my phone. His wife calls and says, base is loaded, Papelbon out. I'm like, we're fine. We're fine. And we, because I play, they hit a bomb, and I just instantly, hands go over the mouth. I felt a tightness in my chest, and, like, my throat was just not feeling well last night during dinner. And I looked at Flutie, and I don't feel good about this. Like, I don't feel well. Yeah, I don't feel well. I just want them to win the division. I mean, I know they're going to be in the playoffs, but this is horrible.
I agree. Well, it was worse watching it in person. I can tell you that. I think you actually were better off just seeing it on a cell phone. But
terrible. I saw the highlights when I went back to my room, and it was just this is a debacle. I mean, this is awful.
Is it known that you're a Red Sox fan?
I know the Red Sox know that I am, and I know actually a lot of the players in Major League Baseball always make fun of me. The Braves make fun of me because I'll walk in and I'll just, you know, sit around and talk to them, and they say, well, whatever, we know you like the Red Sox. I don't know how many of the Yankees players know that I'm a Red Sox fan, but I think people are starting to figure out. I've kind of kept it on the DL for a while, but like I sat in Fenway with my dad on Saturday wearing my big Poppy shirt and cheering and, you know, everything like that. So I think it's getting to be out there, the news.
And you're not a bandwagon jumper. You actually grew up in New England.
Yeah, well, my dad and my mother are from New England. My sister and I were born in Maine. And then, you know, that's how I got into sports was because of my dad. He has two girls, and he basically, I'm the oldest, sat me on the couch and said, this is the Boston Red Sox. They will break your heart, but you will still root for them. This is Larry Bird. And, you know, I was a big nerd in high school when everybody was into Michael Jordan and everybody had their 23 gear. I was a dork with my Larry Bird 33, you know, backpack and stuff like that. And I was rocking the Celtics gear in Florida and stuff like that. So, yeah, no, this is pretty for real. The only thing that we don't root for in New England is the Patriots, and not because they're cheaters, but because of my dad was always a Bart Starr fan. So I grew up loving Brett Favre.
So you're
the
Packers
actual
fan.
One place I want to take my dad before Brett leaves this year. I want to go to Lambeau, but before it's freezing, I don't want to do the whole frozen snot kind of thing at Lambeau. I'm just not. That's not my vibe. That's not my scene.
Yeah, every sports fan should go to Lambeau at some point.
Yeah, I want to go there bad. I would love to see him play. I'd love to get my dad on the field. I've heard it's an amazing experience.
It is. It is definitely right up there. Well, let me ask you this. So you're doing a sideline reporter for a random Red Sox game. You're supposed to be working the game objectively, but you're rooting for the Red Sox. And then, like, I remember a couple times you did games where there was, like, a walk-off homer for the Red Sox. Or, like, how do you balance that?
A walk-off bomb versus Cleveland. Well, yeah. You know what? Prime example, the other night, Friday night, I mean, it was that five-hour game that the Yanks come back and they score six in the top of the eighth. It stinks. I mean, I'm privately saying cuss words in my head because you never know when your mic is on, but I was ticked off. I was just like, oh my gosh, this is a momentum swing. But when it all comes down to it, ESPN's paying my mortgage. I mean, what's more important, showing my, you know, how faithful I am to the Red Sox or the Florida Gators, or, you know, making sure I'm in good standings with ESPN? So you learn to get over it pretty darn quick, and then you can complain about it when you get off air and you go have a few cocktails in Boston.
Well, with that said, you could probably get away with one time. You could probably trip Jeter right after an interview, like accidentally. Just catch feet with him.
That's the only thing I have to tell you, and my father has a big problem with this whole thing. I got to tell you, I like a lot of guys in that Yankees clubhouse. I mean, this year, I know, he's like, Aaron, they're Yankees. But this year alone, I've worked so many Yankees games, more than the past 3 years. And the respect and... Jeter's unbelievable. He's an incredible leader. I have so much respect for him, gained so much respect for him, how he handles himself in the clubhouse, how he handles himself with the media, how he, you know, deals with issues and stuff like that. Another person is Jorge Posada. What an incredible guy. I mean, just, I think he's very comparable. Unfortunately, his batting average is a little better than Jason Veritek right now. But he is just, those are two guys in that clubhouse that I just walk away from, and I'm just like, I almost, at the end of the year, want to write them thank you notes for just making games with the New York Yankees so much easier. They're just terrific guys, incredible leaders, and I really enjoy just talking to them. They make it a lot easier, and I know it's hard. When Jeter hit that bomb the other night off of Schilling, I just was thinking to myself, oh, God, he's incredible, though. He's an unbelievable person and athlete. It's just amazing.
I feel like
my father completely, by the way.
I feel like you're trying to hurt me.
I'm not. And I know this is completely against Red Sox Nation and stuff like that, but it's just, it's this respect I've gained for him. You know, there's a couple of people, well, there's actually, you know, a few people in that clubhouse that aren't easy to deal with. And when you...
Yeah, now we're talking.
Yeah, so when you can talk to the captain and you can talk to the most popular player in New York and he's so easy to deal with, that just makes everything so much more positive when you deal with that team.
Okay, so we don't have to name names, but there are a couple people in the Yankee clubhouse.
You know what, there is one person in the Yankees clubhouse that makes things pretty difficult for me. But no, you don't have to say who it is, obviously. But that's why dealing with guys like A-Rod and Posada, even Giambi, Johnny, it just makes it so, it's such a positive experience. And you know what? Their opinions are the ones that matter anyway, so.
Well, maybe the guy who's not nice to you, maybe he likes you, and it's like fifth grade where you're mean.
No, I completely don't think that's what it is. But I don't know what his deal is or anything like that. But, you know, that's hey, not everybody has to like you. You know, there are some people I know in the Red Sox clubhouse that don't like me, so.
Oh, come on. You were doing so well. You didn't have to say that.
That's what happened, so.
Well, let me ask you this. You went to University of Florida, and you were a dazzler dancer for Florida's basketball team. How did you go from being a dazzler dancer to landing at ESPN?
Well, first of all, I'd always danced all my life. And, you know, I knew I wasn't going to grow up to be a solid gold dancer or anything like that. So although I would love to try Dancing with the Stars, I'm not going to lie.
Wow.
So, you know, in high school, you and I should actually, are you kidding? We should partner up and go after that title. Come on.
I
killed Drew Lachey.
I can't dance. As everyone who went to my wedding can attest, I'm terrible. But I think it's good for you. No, I think you should do it. If Mark Cuban can do it, anybody can do it.
Absolutely. And Kenny Mayne. Yeah, I always danced. And so when I went to Florida from high school, I had seen the dance team and I just knew I wanted to be a part of it and all that. But then, with that said, my father is actually in television. And like I mentioned, I'm in sports because of him. I'm into sports because of him. And so I always knew that I wanted to be in sports broadcasting. And then, of course, at Florida, Coach Spurrier, Coach Donovan, you know, in charge of successful programs there. So I'd go out to football practice with the student TV station and all that stuff. So everything kind of snowballed, and it happened really, really fast. I graduated from UF, and then I actually freelanced for like a year. And then my first legit job out of school, I was 22, sideline reporter for the Tampa Bay Lightning, the worst team in the NHL. They had, you know, a bunch of young kids that really weren't playing very hard. I got to charter on the plane, stay in the hotels, and it taught me how to study because I knew nothing about NHL, and it taught me how to work with athletes and, you know, deal with coaches and teams that really stunk because they were horrible. And then, you know, I went from there to TBS, and then TBS got rid of me, actually. They didn't renew my deal, which they shouldn't have because I was horrible doing studio. I had no business doing studio. I looked like a deer in headlights. And then, ESPN, they didn't renew my deal. And then ESPN had the Stanley Cup playoffs at that point. And I knew the Lightning were going to be good. And, actually they ended up winning the cup that year. And I got to be on the ice interviewing them, cause ESPN signed me to like a 3-month kind of like a tryout deal. So it all kind of blew up. And, you know, these guys from the Lightning obviously knew me as a sister and really looked out for me and given me better stuff than Don Cherry and Hockey Night in Canada had. So. It was awesome. It was like a fairy tale the way it all worked out.
You're not
Even
one of those.
Now I'm living the lap of luxury with the FBI.
Yeah. You're not one of those girls that has like all guys friends and doesn't get along with other girls, are you?
No, you know what? the few girlfriends that I do have, but let's be honest, you know, I'm kind of a tomboy, despite what people think of me and stuff like that. I am a tomboy. You have to learn to hang out with guys. I mean, because there aren't many girls, you know, on a crew at ESPN. There may be one female on the production crew. So you have to be able to be one of the guys.
Right.
But yeah, I do have a lot of guy friends, especially growing up in high school and college and stuff like that. Because I always wanted to talk about sports, and my sorority sisters really had no idea about any of that.
Hmm. Interesting. So let's talk about sideline reporting, because it's such a thankless job, but it seems like you have fun doing what you're doing. But before you started doing this for a living, like, did you see yourself as a sideline reporter, or did you kind of grow into it?
I did. No, I did. You know, at first, the first person that really turned me on to being a female in sports was Hannah Storm, because remember, she used to do NBA on NBC. And
of course.
That's when the Celtics, you know, were good, and Christmas Eve, we'd watch the Knicks and the Celtics, or the Celtics and the Bulls, and, you know, she'd do the halftime updates, and I remember her talkbacks with Charles Barkley, and I just was like, Dad, I want to do this. This is so fun. And, you know, my dad just said, Aaron, everybody wants to do this, you know? So, I kind of always thought that that was something I was going to do, and then, you know, as silly as it sounds, with Melissa Stark on the sidelines, Leslie Visser, even Jill Arrington, I kind of just thought, okay, they seem to know what they're talking about. I'd love to try this out. And then when I got to Florida and I got to be, you know, when I got to go to the games every week and they'd always have a sideline reporter there, I'd go and watch, and I was so interested. So I kind of had an idea that that's what I wanted to do.
Right. I'm kind of torn on the whole sideline reporting thing. One of my friends does it, Rob Stone. I always make fun of him and we go back and forth on it. I think it works if somebody gets injured during the game, or you have a good interviewer who can elicit an interesting response from a player coach, or when they cut to the side during a dead game, they cut to the reporter and they come up with some fact they may not have known. Other times I feel like they throw it to the sideline reporter simply to justify the fact that they brought one to the game.
Right.
Do you feel like sometimes, like what am I doing here? Like I have no role right now in this game. It's third quarter. I got nothing to say.
Sometimes I feel that way. You know, the time I feel like we should not be used at all is when it is a good game. You know, like if we have a game tonight and it's tied up, or, you know, somebody's driving and it's a really, really close game, even with hoops, you know, college basketball when I do that, or my God, even the other night with the Red Sox game, you know, Yankees are coming back, you know, with six runs. There's no need for me to even talk. Honestly,
right.
People don't want to hear from me. They want to listen to what the announcers are saying. They don't care about some human interest story. And I think that's something good that I've accepted. You know, I mean, my producer will say in my ear, Aaron, we want to get you in here. And I'm like, don't push it. Why? There's no need. You know, and I think one thing with our crew for college football is that if there's really no need to do a halftime interview, then we're not doing it. Because honestly, they're going to give you the coach speak anyways, unless you were going to ask them, what the heck were you thinking there? Why did you take that time out? So I've accepted that, you know, but at the same time, there are situations, I mean, I remember, you know, CBS has gotten rid of sideline reporters, which I think is a little absurd, but there was a game last year, I remember Brett Favre was walking off crying, and this wasn't the one that Andrea Kramer got him in, but it was a CBS game, and no one knew what he was going to do. I mean, was that it, or was he, you know, I just remember there was a weird moment with Brett Favre, and I sat there, and I look at my dad, and I'm like, that's why they need a sideline reporter, because no one has any clue what's going on right now. You know, situations with us. That's the stereo by the pool of Four Seasons. you know, Larry Coker last year here in Miami. This is ridiculous. Chris Fowler's trying to do a radio interview. I am too. Larry Coker last year. We didn't know if that was his last game, or we all kind of figured, but I wanted to ask him, you know, what his deal with that was, and he allowed me to interview him for 5 minutes. So I think there is a need for us. I don't think there's a need to push us, though, if it's not necessary, you know?
Do you have to constantly remind yourself to phrase everything into a question?
Instead
of saying, do you have to remember to phrase everything into a question instead of just saying, Coach, you really look good out there today?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something that ESPN has really instilled in their sideline reporters, is that it can't be a yes and no question. It has to be what, why, when, and how. And sometimes that's really hard, but it makes sense, because what if a coach isn't feeling you and doesn't want to give you a good answer and just says yeah, or just says no? I mean, you do have to ask a question. Why else are we there for, you know?
Yeah, but there was a long stretch there where the sideline reporters, for some reason, wouldn't ask questions. They would just basically throw comments out, and there was like this weird fake dialogue where the coaches would just play off the non-question, but nothing would actually be said. And now I feel like we're getting better at it.
I feel like we're getting better at it. And I have to brag on us for a bit, because at ESPN, it's almost like they've told us it's this way or no way. And
yeah.
If you don't want to catch on to what we're doing, then you're not going to have a place here. I feel like, no offense, but sometimes when you do watch other networks, you can tell they haven't gone through the seminars that we have about asking questions or interviews.
I was going to bring that up, actually. The average person doesn't know this, but ESPN is like fanatical about training the reporters. They even have an interviewing expert. I think his name is John Sawatsky.
John Sawatsky. He
gives you seminars. And before the college football season, they gave you a 51-page guide centered around how to do your job.
Absolutely.
Did you win it? I tell you,
it's screwed with the way that you watch an interview now, or you even get ready to conduct an interview. You know, the other night I sat there and I thought I was going to get Giambi after the game, because he started that whole inning, you know, with a home run. And I was thinking to myself, okay, what are three questions that you want to, I mean, you just sit there and you analyze every little thing, and it just, you have to step back after a while and think to yourself, okay, this isn't brain surgery here. Like, just let's relax here, because they've broken it down in so many ways and tried to, you know, get you to think their way, and it's different.
So John Sawatsky's in your head.
He's in my head. He's in my kitchen, so to speak.
There's always been an uneasy balance with female reporters, because it helps to have good looks, but you can't play up the fact that you're good looking or else everyone jumps on you. For instance, in 2000, I think it was, Jill Arrington wore tank tops a couple times during college football games.
Right.
And a couple of the female reporting pioneers, well, I think it was Leslie Visser and Robin Roberts, they kind of went after her publicly a little bit. So how have you balanced that line between wanting to look good on TV but not wanting to look too good?
It's such a double standard, because let's be honest. I mean, I work very, very hard at my job, but I think one of the reasons why I push myself even harder is two reasons. I never played. I've never coached. So I feel like I can't study enough. And I always know that there's going to be, people are going to look at me differently. You know, we do, like, for example, we are going to do this story at the Miami-Texas A&M game about the offensive coordinator's wife, and she is due today. But she's going to the game tonight to sit there and cheer. And we're actually going to make this whole kind of fun. But see, I sometimes struggle with stories like this, because I feel like if Rob Stone or a guy was doing this report, they'd look at it as like, oh, that's some pretty good stuff. But then at the same time, I feel like other people look at it and they're like, she's a blonde, you know, she's 5'10", she likes to wear tight shirts. Blah, blah. Well, of course she's doing the cutesy stuff and she's not talking about the defense. So it's such a double-edged, you know, it's something I personally, it's maybe the biggest thing that I'm insecure about, because who doesn't want to look good? I mean, let's be honest. The reason why I work out late this year as hard as I do is because of these camera phones that are everywhere. I've seen pictures of my body that are completely unflattering that I don't want to see myself look like ever again. So it's like, I want to look good on television because, you know, people are putting me on the internet. They're taking these photos of me. But at the same time, I want people to know that there's more to me than just, hey, what kind of top is she wearing and how does she look in those pants, you know? So
my advice would be not to Google yourself. I don't think it's a good idea for anybody who's visible in any medium to Google themselves, but I would say especially for any female on-air personality, just do not.
Yeah, you know. The first time I ever, when I was with the Lightning, and, you know, I wasn't visibly national, but visible national, but a few of the fans were writing about me, and I would see my name on the message board, so I'd click on it, and people talk. I mean, I have a crooked nose, and I have a big bump on the top of my nose, and a lot of people like to talk about it. It's my grandfather's nose. That's my grandpa's nose. Tough. I'm not getting a nose job. People would write, oh, she needs a nose job, or, you know, we know Erin Andrews makes a lot of money, so why isn't she dressed better? And, you know, let's guess if this is plastic surgery or not. And I just started hysterically crying. And my dad said, look, if you want to do this for a living and you want to make it on ESPN, it's going to get worse. It's gotten worse. But I think if anything now, I find it hilarious. I mean, people just think the craziest stuff up, whether they, you know, Photoshop a photo at Iowa or something like that. I mean, half of it is really funny. So, but it, you're right. You can't take it seriously and then just don't even Google it yourself.
Yeah, and I didn't even think of that with the whole camera phone thing. So every game you go to and then doing God knows what with it.
Right. I mean, you could be wiping your nose or adjusting your IFB pack and it looks like you're picking your butt or you're picking your nose. And it's
right.
You know, you blow on your nose. It's everything. So that's why you kind of just learn you're always on. Everybody's going to, you know, either write about you on the internet or, you know, show the picture on the internet. It's unfortunately, you can't do a lot of things in public. But, I mean, it's the job I chose. And let's be honest, it's not a bad job to have. So you can't really complain too much about it.
Well, I think for Rob Stone, it's the exact opposite.
Which
I make fun of him constantly about it. But we went to a Tampa Bay game. And there were not people snapping camera phone shots of us. So.
No.
And actually, it's probably easier to not be you, I would say, on a daily basis. But let me ask you this. Have the older reporters helped you out and given you advice? Like people like Buzzy Viss and Robin Roberts?
I'll be honest with you, in the beginning, it was really hard when I was an intern and people saw me coming around and it was just kind of like, the perceived notion. I mean, I had to prove myself, even to a lot of male anchors or male play-by-play guys. Every day you kind of have to prove yourself to the people that you work with just to show, hey, she's here for, you know, another reason besides how she looks and stuff like that. And, you know, I think slowly but surely the word around ESPN has gotten around that I do work pretty hard. And I think there's always that skepticism. But, yeah, male and female, they've been really, really helpful. Guys like Mike Tirico, I've been so blessed to work with. Brent Musburger, you know, Linda Cohn, I can go to her whenever I need anything. Sage Steele actually she's an amazing person. When I was an intern in Tampa, she was one of the main sports reporters in Florida. So I used to go around with her. She used to let me shadow her. So, yeah, I don't forget those people. And that's why, you know, when we go to colleges and stuff and kids want to come and shadow me and see what it's about, I'm like, absolutely.
Right. Well, you know what's interesting about this whole thing is that society has changed so much in the last 10 years. Especially the way women dress. Like, just, you know, I was in New York City 6 weeks ago, and women basically, they wear cocktail dresses and flip-flops, and that's their work outfit.
Yeah.
And you look at, like, the way Britney Spears was dressed at that MTV thing, and people just accept it now. Like, it's just the way it is. But with sideline reporting, with the way women dress on TV, it's still the way it was in 1975, and it's not supposed to evolve at all. And maybe it shouldn't evolve. I don't know. But it's just – it's kind of funny because I remember that Jill Arrington tank top thing. What was it, like 7 years ago or whatever.
Right. Oh,
and,
yeah. I do too.
Yeah. And I still feel like that would happen today. Like if you wore a tank top and you were dressed in whatever way for a Red Sox game, I think it would be a big deal. But in reality, you'd be dressing the way everybody else dresses.
Yeah. No, I agree completely. It's hard for me because I'm still in my 20s and, you know, I want to look kind of like my age. But at the same time, it is – we are told to be very conservative, which I feel like we should, though, to be honest with you.
I agree.
I'm a little old school with that.
Yeah. No, I think that's legitimate. So what's
like
your
I'll rock out a tank top, but it just can't be spaghetti strap. It can't show too much, you know?
Yeah. Although I'm surprised that, like, one of our rival networks, maybe like Fox Sports Net or something, hasn't, like, tried to play that part up more. You know, because
could. They probably could, but look at, like, Pam Oliver. I mean, she's not going to rock a spaghetti strap tank. I mean, she's conservative. She's old school, and that's who I've learned from, and that's why I, you know, it's a trickle-down effect. But you've got to think, though, it's going to change. It's a sign of the times. It's going to change.
Yeah,
it's who's going to have enough courage to do it. I'm sure as heck not going to, because with me, there is a different standard. I'm held to a different standard. I can't get away with a lot of the stuff that people may want to do or may want me to try. I just can't, because if I do, I'm the first one reprimanded.
So what's your ultimate goal? Where do you see yourself 5 years from now?
5 years from now, hopefully, you know, wanting to get serious about a family and stuff like that. But, you know, I really have no desire to get off the sidelines right now. I think when I have kids and maybe settle down personally, maybe I'll want to just hunker down with one or two sports, because right now I'm doing like 3 to 4. So it's year round. I actually haven't even taken a vacation in a while. So, But I feel like I have so much to improve on the sidelines that I want things to just be second nature. I want when you flip on, you know, the Florida LSU game in a couple weeks, I want to be there with Brent and Kirk. You know, I want to be at the games. And, until I feel like I'm there professionally, then I want to continue to get better on the sidelines. And, you know, studio is always interesting. I'm definitely going to leave that door open, and I think that'll help. That'll be something I'll want to do when I get old, not older, but settle down and stuff like that, you know. But I still love being by the crowd and the athletes and the coaches and the pageantry and all that stuff. I just feel like that's what makes the sport.
What's the single best game you've done?
Ever?
Yeah, for ESPN, let's say.
Gosh, it just depends on the sport. You know, the thing that was probably the most emotional and, personally for me, when the Tampa Bay Lightning won the Stanley Cup and I was there, that was pretty incredible because that's where I started. It was like my brothers. We all started and we were horrible, and then they won the cup and I got to be there. It was kind of like how everything evolved.
Plus you grew a playoff beard, didn't you?
What's that?
Didn't you grow a playoff beard during the playoffs then?
I did. It was a little spotty, though. It was no playoff beard for me. I got to tell you that a scene at Virginia Tech a couple weeks ago was pretty hard to beat and something I don't think I'll ever forget. So that was, at the same time, very difficult, but I was honored to be there as well. So.
Right. What about, did you do any of the big Florida games the last couple of years?
No, I, you know, because of CBS and the SEC, I didn't do any of the big football games. I did.
What about basketball?
Yeah, you know what? I got to do when those guys were there. I did their Kentucky game, and that was really it. But I got to go to the Final Fours. Obviously, I didn't get to go to any of the championship games, the three championship games with the football and the basketball team. But that's okay. Those are ones where it's probably better I wasn't there because the camera phones would have been out, would have seen me and praying and all that stuff.
All right, so for the next couple years, you're going to continue the sideline thing, but you're going to make the Dancing with the Stars appearance as soon as they ask you.
I'd really like to. I'll be honest with you. I'd have to give up a sport, though, because that's, I'm sure, during some sort of season, probably college basketball. But, yeah, I'd love to try that. I don't think I'm a big enough name for it, though.
What about The Bachelorette?
No.
Come on, 25 bachelors. You get to pick.
No. I don't need that. That's how it is when I walk into a major league clubhouse anyway, so come on.
All right, Aaron Andrews, hope you will come on with us again at some point during the college basketball season. We can get your
thoughts. Oh, my gosh. I've been waiting to talk to you forever. I was so excited.
Thank you.
Yeah, you let me know you wanted to do this.
Enjoy the Four Seasons Miami pool.
We will. We're soaking up the sun. It's good stuff out here.
And tell Doug Flutie thanks for the memories.
I will.
He really was like, when he threw the Hail Mary pass on Thanksgiving, I honestly might have been one of the 10 greatest moments of my life.
Well, we were looking at footage of it today, and I told him, you know what? I just don't need to see your belly button in that. You know, those were 80s uniforms. Those were horrible. I don't understand the whole belly button thing. I don't need to see that.
Well, the other shocking thing about Doug Flutie when you meet him, which I didn't realize, he's 5'1".
Oh, he's a muffin. Yeah, he's a little munchkin.
He's tiny. I mean, he's really like Muggsy Bogues.
And I got to tell you, we can't go anywhere without people stopping him. It's ridiculous. I mean,
yeah.
I thought when Kirk Herbstreit left, it was going to be like we were losing Justin Timberlake. But this one, I mean, we can't go anywhere without people just stopping him. Can I get you to sign this for my kid? It's just like, come on, we're late. Let's go.
People love the celebs. All right, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks again for coming on.
All right, buddy. Thank you so much.
Target the sun off. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.